After a few minutes gaining the nerve to look, I snuck a peek to the other side of the room. As expected, Jessica Davis looked pissed. Why? Because right next to my name, but in the other column, was hers. Her pencil tapped against her notebook at Morse code speed, and her face was burning red. My only thought? Thank God I don't know Morse code. Truth is, Jessica Davis is so much prettier than I am. Write up a list of every body part and you'll have a row of check marks the whole way down for each time her body beats mine.
I disagree, Hannah. All the way down.
Everyone knows worst ass in freshman class was a lie. You can't even consider it stretching the truth. But I'm sure no one cared why Jessica ended up on that side of your list, Alex. Well, no one except you. And me. And Jessica. Makes three.
And a lot more than that, I'm guessing, are about to find out.
Maybe some people think you were right in choosing me. I don't think so. But let me put it this way. I don't think my ass, as you call it, was the deciding factor. I think the deciding factor was revenge.
I tear the blades of grass out of the gutter and stand up to leave. As I start walking, I rub the blades between my fingers till they fall away.
But this tape is not about your motivation, Alex. Though, that is coming up. This tape is about how people change when they see your name on a stupid list. This tape is about...
A pause in her speech. I reach into my jacket and turn the volume up. She's uncrinkling a piece of paper, smoothing it out.
Okay. I just looked over every name, every story that completes these tapes, and guess what? Every single event documented here may never have happened had you, Alex, not written my name on that list. It's that simple. You needed a name to put down opposite Jessica's, and since everyone at school already had a perverted image of me after Justin's little number, I was the perfect choice, wasn't I? And the snowball keeps a-rolling. Thanks, Justin.
Alex's list was a joke. A bad one, true. But he had no idea it would affect her like this. This isn't fair. And what about me? What did I do? How will Hannah say that I scarred her? Because I have no idea. And after people hear about it, what are they going to think when they see me? Some of them, at least two of them, already know why I'm on here. Do they see me differently now? No, they can't. Because my name does not belong with theirs. I should not be on this list, I'm sure of it. I did nothing wrong.
So, to back up a bit, this tape isn't about why you did what you did, Alex. It's about the repercussions of what you did. More specifically, it's about the repercussions to me. It's about those things you didn't plan. Things you couldn't plan.
God, I don't believe it. I press pause. The first red star. Hannah's old house. There it is. But I don't believe it. This house was my destination one other time, after a party. An elderly couple lives there now. And one night, about a month ago, the husband was driving his car a few blocks away, talking to his wife on the phone, when he hit another car. I shut my eyes and shake my head against the memory. I don't want to see it, but I can't help it. The man was hysterical, crying, "I need to call her! I need to call my wife!" His phone had disappeared somewhere in the crash. We tried using mine to call her back, but his wife's phone kept ringing. She was confused, too afraid to click over. She wanted to stay on the line her husband had called her on. She had a bad heart, he said. She needed to know he was okay. I called the police using my phone and told the man I would continue trying to reach his wife. But he told me I needed to tell her. She needed to know he was okay. Their house wasn't far. A tiny crowd had gathered, some of them taking care of the person in the other car. He was from our school, a senior, and he was in much worse shape than the old man. I shouted for a few of them to wait with my guy till an ambulance arrived. Then I left, racing toward his house to calm his wife. But I didn't know I was also racing toward a house Hannah once lived in. This house. But this time, I walk. Like Justin and Zach, I walk down the center of the road toward East Floral Canyon where two streets meet like an upside-down T, just as Hannah described it. The curtains in the bay window are shut for the night. But the summer before our freshman year, Hannah stood there with Kat. The two of them looked out to where I am now, and they watched two boys walk up the street. They watched them step off the road and onto the wet grass, slipping and tumbling over each other. I keep walking till I reach the gutter, pressing the toes of my shoes against the curb. I step up onto the grass and just stand there. A simple, basic step. I don't slip. And I can't help wondering, had Justin and Zach made it to Hannah's front door, would she have fallen for Zach instead of Justin a few months later? Would Justin have been wiped out of the picture? Would the rumors never have started? Would Hannah still be alive? I press play.
The day your list came out wasn't too traumatic. I survived. I knew it was a joke, and the people I saw standing in the halls, huddled around whoever had a copy, they knew it was a joke too. One big, fat, happy joke. But what happens when someone says you have the best ass in the freshman class? Let me tell you, Alex, because you'll never know. It gives people, some people, the go-ahead to treat you like you're nothing but that specific body part. Need an example? Fine. B3 on your maps. Blue Spot Liquor.
It's nearby.
I have no idea why it's called that, but it's only a block or so away from my first house. I used to walk there any time I had a sweet tooth, which means, yes, I went there every day.
Blue Spot has always looked grimy from the sidewalk, so I've never actually gone inside.
95% of the time, Blue Spot was empty. Just me and the man behind the register. I don't think a lot of people know it's even there, because it's tiny and squished between two other stores, both of which have been closed since we moved here. From the sidewalk, Blue Spot looks like a posting board for cigarette and alcohol ads. And inside? Well, it looks about the same.
I walk along the sidewalk in front of Hannah's old house. A driveway climbs up a gentle slope before disappearing beneath a weathered wooden garage door.
Hanging over the front of the counter, a wire rack holds all the best candies. Well, they're my favorites anyway. And the moment I open the door, the man at the register rings me up, cha-ching, even before I pick up a candy bar, because he knows I never leave without one. Someone once described the man behind the counter as having the face of a walnut. And he does. Probably from smoking so much, but having the name Wally probably doesn't help.
Ever since she arrived, Hannah rode a blue bike to school. I can almost picture her now, right here. Backpack on, coasting down the driveway. Her front wheel turns and she pedals past me on the sidewalk. I watch her ride down a long stretch of sidewalk, passing trees, parked cars, and houses. I stand and watch her image disappear. Again. Then I turn slowly and walk away.
Honestly, in all the times I've been to Blue Spot, I don't think I've heard Wally utter a single word. I'm trying to remember a single hello or hey or even a friendly grunt, but the only sound I ever heard him utter was because of you, Alex. What a pal.
Alex. That's right. Yesterday someone shoved him in the halls. Someone shoved Alex into me. But who?
That day, as usual, a bell jingled over the door as I walked in. Cha-ching went the register. I picked out a candy bar from the rack on the counter, but I can't tell you which one because I don't remember.
I caught Alex to keep him from falling. I asked if he was okay, but he just ignored me, picked up his backpack, and hurried down the hall. Did I do something to piss him off, I wondered? I couldn't think of anything.
If I wanted to, I could tell you the name of the person who walked in while I searched my backpack for money. I do remember. But he was just one of many jerks I've run into over the years. I don't know. Maybe I should expose all of them. But as far as your story goes, Alex, his action, his horrible, disgusting action, was just an after effect of yours. Plus, he's got a whole tape all to himself.
I wince. What happened in that store because of Alex's list? No, I don't want to know. And I don't want to see Alex. Not tomorrow, not the day after that. I don't want to see him or Justin. Or fat-ass jackass Jimmy. God, who else is involved in this?
He threw open the door to Blue Spot. Hey, Wally, he said. And he said it with such arrogance, which sounded so natural coming from his mouth. I could tell it wasn't the first time he said it that way, acting like Wally was beneath him.
Oh, Hannah. Hey, he said. I didn't see you there.
Did I mention I was standing at the counter visible to anyone the moment they opened the door? I acknowledged him with a tiny smile, found my money, and dropped it into Wally's wrinkled hand. Wally, as far as I could tell, didn't respond to him in any way. Not an eye catch or a twitch or a smile. His usual greeting for me.
I follow the sidewalk around a corner, away from the residential streets, on my way to Blue Spot. It's amazing how a town can change so much in one corner. The houses behind me weren't big or fancy, very middle class. But they sit back to back with the part of town that's been slowly falling apart for years.
Hey, Wally. Guess what? His breath came from just over my shoulder. My backpack was resting on the counter while I zipped it shut. Wally's eyes were focused down just beyond the edge of the counter near my waist, and I knew what was coming. A cupped hand smacked my ass, and then he said it. Best ass in the freshman class, Wally. Standing right here in your store.
There's more than a few guys I can picture doing that. The sarcasm. The arrogance.
Did it hurt? No. But that doesn't matter, does it? Because the question is, did he have the right to do it? And the answer, I hope, is obvious. I knocked his hand away with a quick backhand swipe that every girl should master. And that's when Wally emerged from his shell. That's when Wally made a sound. His mouth stayed shut, and it was nothing more than a quick click of the tongue. But that little noise took me by surprise. Inside, I knew. Wally was a ball of rage.
And there it is. The neon sign of Blue Spot Liquor. I press pause. On this block, only two stores remain open. Blue Spot Liquor and Restless Video across the street. Blue Spot looks just as grimy as the last time I walked by it. Even the cigarette and alcohol ads look the same, like wallpaper in the front window. A brass bell jingles when I open the door, the same bell Hannah listened to whenever she came in for a candy fix. Instead of letting it swing shut behind me, I hold the edge of the door and slowly push it shut, watching it ring the bell again. Can I help you? Without looking, I already know it's not Wally. But why am I disappointed? I didn't come to see Wally. He asks again, a little louder. Can I help you? I can't bring myself to look toward the front counter. Not yet. I don't want to imagine her standing there. At the back of the store, behind a wall of see-through doors, are the refrigerated drinks. And even though I'm not thirsty, I go there. I open one of the doors and take an orange soda, the first plastic bottle I touch. Then I walk to the front of the store and pull out my wallet. A wire rack loaded with candy bars hangs from the front counter. These are the ones Hannah liked. My left eye begins to twitch.
Is that all?
He asks. I place the soda on the counter and look down, rubbing my eye. The pain begins somewhere above my eye, but it goes deeper, behind my eyebrow. A pinching I've never felt before.
There's more behind you, the clerk says.
He must think I'm looking at the candy. I grab a Butterfinger from the rack and place it next to my drink. I put a few dollars on the counter and slide them over to him. Cha-ching! He slides back a couple of coins and I notice a plastic name tag stuck to the register. Does he still work here? I ask.
Wally?
The clerk exhales through his nose.
Day shift.
When I leave, the brass bell jingles. I press play.
I swung my backpack over my shoulder and probably whispered, excuse me. But when I moved around him, I purposely avoided his eyes. I had the door in sight, ready to leave, when he grabbed my wrist and spun me around. He said my name, and when I looked into his eyes, the joking was gone. I yanked my arm, but his grip was tight.
Across the street, the neon sign of Restless Video flickers erratically. I know who Hannah's talking about now. I've seen his wrist-grabbing stunt before. It always makes me want to grab him by the shirt and push him until he lets the girl go. But instead, every time, I pretend not to notice. What could I do anyway?
Then the jerk let go and put his hand on my shoulder. I'm only playing, Hannah. Just relax. Okay, let's dissect what just happened. I thought about it the entire walk home from Blue Spot, which is probably why I don't remember which candy bar I bought that day.
I sit on the chipped curb outside of Blue Spot, setting the orange soda next to me and balancing the Butterfinger on my knee. Not that I have an appetite for anything sweet. So why did I buy it? Was it only because Hannah used to buy candy from the same rack? And why does that matter? I went to the first Red Star and the second. I don't need to go everywhere or do everything she says.
First, his words. Then, his actions. Statement number one.
I'm only playing, Hannah.
Translation, your ass is my play toy. You might think you have final say over what happens to your ass, but you don't. At least not as long as
I'm only playing.
I tap one end of the candy bar, making a teeter-totter on my knee.
Statement number two.
Just relax.
Translation. Come on, Hannah. All I did was touch you with no indication that you wanted me to touch you. If it'll make you feel better, go ahead. You can touch me wherever you'd like. Now, let's talk about his actions, shall we? Action number one. Grabbing my ass. Interpretation? Let me back up and say that this guy had never grabbed my ass before. So why now? My pants weren't anything special. They weren't overly tight. Sure, they were slung a little low and he probably got a hip shot, but he didn't grab my hips. He grabbed my ass.
I'm starting to understand. I'm starting to see what Hannah means. And that opens up a black hole in the pit of my stomach. Best lips. That was another category on the list.
Alex, am I saying your list gave him permission to grab my ass? No. I'm saying it gave him an excuse. And an excuse was all this guy needed.
It wasn't till that list came out that I even noticed Angela Romero's lips. But after that, I became fascinated by them. When I watched her give speeches during class, I had no idea what words were coming out of her mouth. I just watched those lips move up and down, mesmerized when she said things like slippery slope, which, behind her lips, exposed the underside of her tongue.
Action number two. He grabbed my wrist, then put his hand on my shoulder. You know, I'm not even going to interpret this. I'm just going to tell you why it pissed me off. I've had my butt grabbed before. No big deal. But this time, it was grabbed because someone else wrote my name on a list. And when this guy saw me upset, did he apologize? No. Instead, he got aggressive. Then, in the most condescending way, he told me to relax. Then he put his hand on my shoulder as if by touching me, he'd somehow comfort me. Here's a tip. If you touch a girl, even as a joke, and she pushes you off, leave her alone. Don't touch her anywhere. Just stop. Your touch does nothing but sicken her.
The rest of Angela was nowhere near as mesmerizing as her lips. Not bad, just not mesmerizing. Then, last summer, at a friend's house, we played Spin the Bottle after a bunch of us admitted we were Spin the Bottle virgins. And I refused to let the game end till my spin landed on Angela, or till her spin landed on me. When that happened, I pressed my lips agonizingly slowly and precisely against hers.
There are some sick and twisted people out there, Alex, and maybe I'm one of them. But the point is, when you hold people up for ridicule, you have to take responsibility when other people act on it.
Later on, Angela and I made out on her back porch. I just couldn't get enough of those lips. All because of a list.
Actually, that's not right. You didn't hold me up for ridicule, did you? My name was in the hot column. You wrote Jessica's name in the not column. You held Jessica up for ridicule. And that's where our snowball picks up speed. Jessica, my dear, you're next.
I press stop. I pop open the Walkman and pull out the first tape. In the smallest pocket of my backpack, I find the next tape. The one with a blue number 3 written in the corner. I drop that into the deck and snap the door shut. Cassette 2, Side A. I press play. Before Hannah's voice kicks in, there's a pause.
Step by step. That's how we'll get through this. One foot in front of the other.
Across the street, behind the buildings, the sun continues its fall. All the street lamps are on, up and down the block. I grab the Butterfinger from my knee, the soda from beside me, and stand up.
We've already finished one tape both sides, so stick with me. Things get better, or worse, depending on your point of view.
There's a trash can, an oil drum spray-painted blue, near the front door of Blue Spot Liquor. I drop the unwrapped Butterfinger into it, unable to imagine my stomach holding down anything solid, and walk away.
I know it may sound like it, but I wasn't completely alone the beginning of my freshman year. Two other freshmen, both featured here on Hannah Baker's Greatest Hits, were also new to the area. Alex Standall and Jessica Davis. And while we never became close friends, we did rely on each other those first few weeks of school.
I twist the top off my orange soda. It hisses, and I take a sip.
With 1 week left of summer vacation, Ms. Antilli called me at home to see if I'd meet her at school. A little new student orientation, she said. In case you don't remember, Ms. Antilli was the guidance counselor for students with last names beginning A through G. Later that year, she moved to another school district.
I remember she was replaced by Mr. Porter. It was supposed to be a temporary position, but he's still at it. An English teacher as well as a guidance counselor.
Which is very unfortunate, as it turns out, but that is for a later tape.
An icy sweat breaks across my forehead. Mr. Porter? Does he have something to do with this? The world around me tilts and spins. I grab onto the trunk of a skinny sidewalk tree.
If she had told me the real purpose of our get-together was to introduce me to another new student, I wouldn't have gone. I mean, what if we had nothing in common? Or what if I thought we had nothing in common, but she, the other student, thought we did? Or what if the opposite happened and I thought we could become friends, but she didn't? So many things could have gone so horribly wrong.
I press my forehead against the smooth bark and try to calm my breathing.
But the other girl was Jessica Davis, and she didn't want to be there any more than I did. We both expected Ms. Antilli to spew a bunch of psychobabble at us. What it means, what it takes to be a great student, how this school is made up of the best and the brightest in the state, how everyone is given the same opportunities to succeed if they're willing to try. But instead, she gave each of us a buddy.
I close my eyes. I don't want to see it, but it's so clear. When rumors of Hannah's unexplained absence began spreading through school, Mr. Porter asked our class why he kept hearing her name mentioned in the halls. He looked nervous, almost sick, like he knew the answer but wanted someone to convince him otherwise. Then a girl whispered, "Someone saw an ambulance leaving her house."
The moment Ms. Antilli told us why we were there, Jessica and I turned to each other. Her lips parted as if she wanted to say something. But what could she say with me sitting right there? She felt blindsided, confused, lied to. I know that's how she felt because I felt the same way. And I'll never forget Ms. Antilli's reaction. Two short, drawn-out words. Or not?
I squeeze my eyes tight, trying hard to remember that day as clearly as possible. Was it pain on Mr. Porter's face? Or was it fear? He just stood there, staring at Hannah's desk, through her desk, and no one said a word, but we looked around, at each other. Then he left. Mr. Porter walked out of class and didn't come back for a week. Why? Did he know? Did he know because of something he'd done?
And here, to the best of my memory, is what we said. Me. I'm sorry, Ms. Antilli, I just didn't think that's why you called me in here. Jessica. Me neither. I wouldn't have come. I mean, I'm sure Hillary and I have things in common, and I'm sure she's a great person, but... Me. It's Hannah. Jessica. I called you Hillary, didn't I? Sorry. Me. It's okay, I just thought you should know my name if we're going to be such fabulous friends. And then the three of us laughed. Jessica and I had very similar laughs, which made us laugh even harder. Ms. Antilli's laugh wasn't quite as heartfelt, more of a nervous laugh, but still a laugh. She claimed to have never tried matching up friends before, and was doubtful she ever would again. But guess what? After the meeting, Jessica and I did hang out. Very sneaky, Ms. Antilli. Very sneaky. We left campus, and at first the conversation felt awkward, but it was nice having someone to talk to other than my parents.
A city bus pulls up to the curb in front of me, silver with blue stripes.
We walked past my turnoff, but I didn't say anything. I didn't want to stop our conversation, but I also didn't want to invite her over because we really didn't know each other yet. So we continued walking until we reached downtown. I found out later that she did the same thing, walked past the street where she lived in order to keep talking with me. So where did we go? E7 on your map. Monet's Garden Cafe and Coffee House.
The bus door wheezes open.
Neither of us were coffee drinkers, but it seemed like a nice place to chat.
Through the foggy windows, I see that almost all the seats are empty.
We both got hot chocolate. She ordered it thinking it would be funny. But me? I always order hot chocolate.
I've never ridden a city bus. Never had a reason to. But it's getting darker and colder every minute. I press pause. It doesn't cost anything to ride the bus at night, so I hop on. I move right by the driver without either of us saying a word to each other. She doesn't even look at me. I make my way down the center aisle, buttoning my jacket against the cold, giving each button more attention than required. Any excuse to avert my eyes from the other passengers. I know how I must look to them. Confused. Guilty. In the process of being crushed. I choose a bench that, as long as no one else boards, is situated between three or four empty seats all around. The blue vinyl cushion is ripped down the middle, with the yellow stuffing inside about to burst out. I slide over to the window. The glass is cold, but resting my head against it helps relax me. I press play.
I honestly don't remember much of what we said that afternoon. Do you, Jessica? Because when I close my eyes, everything happens in a kind of montage. Laughing. Trying hard not to spill our drinks, waving our hands while we talk.
I close my eyes. The glass cools one side of my overheated face. I don't care where this bus is going. I'll ride it for hours if I'm allowed to. I'll just sit here and listen to the tapes. And maybe, without trying, I'll fall asleep.
Then at one point, you lean across the table. "I think that guy's checking you out," you whispered. I knew exactly who you were talking about because I'd been watching him as well. But he wasn't checking me out. "He's checking you out," I said. In a contest of who's got the biggest balls, all of you listening should know that Jessica wins. "Excuse me," she said to Alex, in case you haven't figured out the name of the mystery man. "But which one of us are you checking out?"
And a few months later, after Hannah and Justin fully break up, after the rumors begin, Alex writes a list. Who's hot? Who's not? But there at Monet's, no one knew where that meeting would lead. I want to push stop on the Walkman and rewind their whole conversation, to rewind into the past and warn them, or prevent them from even meeting. But I can't. You can't rewrite the past.
Alex blushed. I'm talking and all the blood in his body rushing up to his face kind of blushed. And when he opened his mouth to deny it, Jessica cut him off. "Don't lie. Which one of us were you checking out?"
Through the frosty glass, downtown's street lamps and neon lights slide by. Most of the shops are closed for the night, but the restaurants and bars remain open.
At that moment, I would have paid dearly for Jessica's friendship. She was the most outgoing, honest, tell-it-like-it-is girl I'd ever met. Silently, I thanked Ms. Antilli for introducing us. Alex stuttered and Jessica leaned over, letting her fingers fall gracefully onto his table. "Look, we saw you watching us," she said. "We're both new to this town and we'd like to know who you were staring at. It's important." Alex stammered.
I'm new here too.
I think Jessica and I both said something along the lines of, "Oh," and then it was our turn to blush. Poor Alex just wanted to be part of our conversation, so we let him. And I think we talked for at least another hour, probably more. Just three people happy that the first day of school wouldn't be spent wandering the halls alone, or eating lunch alone, getting lost alone.
Not that it matters, but where is this bus going? Does it leave our town for another one? Or does it loop endlessly through these streets? Maybe I should have checked before getting on.
That afternoon at Monet's was a relief for all three of us. How many nights had I fallen asleep terrified thinking of that first day of school? Too many. And after Monet's, none. Now I was excited. And just so you know, I never thought of Jessica or Alex as friends, not even at the beginning when I would have loved two automatic friendships. And I know they felt the same way, because we talked about it. We talked about our past friends and why those people had become our friends. We talked about what we were searching for in new friends at our new school. But those first few weeks until we each peeled away, Monet's garden was our safe haven. If one of us had had a hard time fitting in or meeting people, we'd go to Monet's, back in the garden at the far table to the right. I'm not sure who started it, but whoever had the most exhausting day would lay a hand in the center of the table and say, "Ollie, ollie, oxen free." The other two would lay their hands on top and lean in. Then we'd listen, sipping drinks with our free hands. Jessica and I always drank hot chocolate. Over time, Alex made his way through the entire menu.
I've only been to Monet's a few times, but I think it's on the street the bus is going down now.
Yes, we were cheesy, and I'm sorry if this episode's making you sick. If it helps, it's almost too sweet for me. But Monet's truly filled whatever void needed filling at the time. For all of us. But don't worry, it didn't last.
I slide across the bench to the aisle, then stand up in the moving bus.
The first to drop out was Alex. We were friendly when we saw each other in the halls, but it never went beyond that. At least with me, it didn't.
Bracing my hands against the backrests, I make my way to the front of the shifting bus.
Now, down to the two of us, Jessica and me, the whole thing changed pretty fast. The talks became chit-chat and not much more.
"When's the next stop?" I ask. I feel the words leave my throat, but they're barely whispers above Hannah's voice in the engine. The driver looks at me in the rearview mirror.
Then Jessica stopped going. And though I went to Monet's a few more times, hoping one of them might wander in, eventually I stopped going too. Until...
"Only other people here are asleep," the driver says. I watch her lips carefully to make sure I understand. "I can stop wherever you'd like."
See, the cool thing about Jessica's story is that so much of it happens in one spot, making life much easier for those of you following the stars.
The bus passes Monet's. "Here's good," I say.
Yes, I met Jessica for the first time in Ms. Antilli's office. But we got to know each other at Monet's.
I hold myself steady as the bus decelerates and pulls to the curb.
And we got to know Alex at Monet's. And then this happened.
The door wheezes open.
At school one day, Jessica walked up to me in the halls. "We need to talk," she said. She didn't say where or why, but I knew she meant Monet's, and I thought I knew why.
I descend the stairs and step from the gutter up onto the curb. I readjust the headphones and start walking back half a block.
When I got there, Jessica was sitting slumped in a chair, arms dangling by her sides like she'd been waiting a long time. And maybe she had. Maybe she hoped I would skip my last class to join her. So I sat down and slid my hand into the middle of the table. "Ollie, ollie, oxen free." She lifted one of her hands and slapped the paper on the table. Then she pushed it across and spun it around for me to read. But I didn't need it spun around because the first time I read that paper, it was upside down on Jimmy's desk. Who's hot? Who's not? I knew which side of the list I was on, according to Alex, and my so-called opposite was sitting across from me, at our safe haven, no less. Mine, hers, and Alex's. "Who cares?" I told her. "It doesn't mean anything."
I swallow hard. When I read that list, I passed it down the aisle without a thought. At the time, it seemed kind of funny.
"Hannah," she said, "I don't care that he picked you over me." I knew exactly where that conversation was headed, and I was not going to let her take us there.
And now? How do I see it now? I should have grabbed every copy I could find and thrown them all away.
He did not choose me over you, Jessica, I said. He chose me to get back at you, and you know that. He knew my name would hurt you more than anyone else's. She closed her eyes and said my name in almost a whisper. Hannah. Do you remember that, Jessica? Because I do. When someone says your name like that, when they won't even look you in the eyes, there is nothing more you can do or say. Their mind is made up. Hannah, you said. I know the rumors. You can't know rumors, I said. And maybe I was being a little sensitive, but I had hoped, silly me, that there would be no more rumors when my family moved here. That I had left the rumors and gossip behind me, for good. You can hear rumors, I said, but you can't know them. Again, you said my name. Hannah. Yes, I knew the rumors, and I swore to you that I hadn't seen Alex one time outside of school. But you wouldn't believe me. And why should you believe me? Why would anyone not believe a rumor that fits so nicely with an old rumor? Huh, Justin? Why?
Jessica could have heard so many rumors about Alex and Hannah, but none of them were true.
For Jessica, it was easier to think of me as bad Hannah than as the Hannah she got to know at Monet's. It was easier to accept, easier to understand. For her, the rumors needed to be true.
I remember a bunch of guys joking with Alex in the locker room.
Pat-a-cake, baker's man.
Then someone asked him,
Pat that muffin baker's man?
And everyone knew what was being said. When the row cleared out, only Alex and I remained. A tiny wrench of jealousy twisted up my insides. Ever since Kat's going away party, I couldn't get Hannah out of my mind. But I couldn't bring myself to ask if what they had said was true. Because if it was, I didn't want to hear it. Tightening his shoelaces and without looking at me, Alex denied the rumor. Just so you know.
Fine, I said. Fine, Jessica. Thank you for helping me the first few weeks of school. It meant a lot, and I'm sorry Alex screwed that up with this stupid little list of his, but he did. I told her I knew all about their relationship. On that first day at Monet's, he had been checking one of us out, and it wasn't me. And yes, that made me jealous, and if it helped her get over it, I accepted any blame she wanted to put on me for the two of them breaking up. But it was not true.
I reached Monet's. Two guys stand outside, leaning against the wall. One smokes a cigarette, and the other is burrowed deep into his jacket.
But all Jessica heard was me accepting blame. She rose up beside her chair, glaring down at me, and swung. So tell me, Jessica, which did you mean to do? Punch me or scratch me? Because it felt like a little bit of both. Like you couldn't really decide. And what was it you called me? Not that it matters, but just for the record. Because I was too busy lifting my hand and ducking, but you got me. And I missed what you said. That tiny scar you've all seen above my eyebrow, that's the shape of Jessica's fingernail, which I plucked out myself.
I noticed that scar a few weeks ago, at the party. A tiny flaw on a pretty face, and I told her how cute it was. Minutes later, she started freaking out.
Or maybe you've never seen it, but I see it every morning when I get ready for school. Good morning, Hannah, it says, and every night when I get ready for bed. Sleep tight.
I push open the heavy wooden glass door to Monet's. Warm air rushes out to grab me and everyone turns, upset at the person letting in the cold. I slink inside and shut the door behind me.
But it's more than just a scratch. It's a punch in the stomach and a slap in the face. It's a knife in my back because you would rather believe some made-up rumor than what you knew to be true. Jessica, my dear, I'd really love to know if you dragged yourself to my funeral. And if you did you notice your scar? And what about you, the rest of you? Did you notice the scars you left behind? No, probably not.
That wasn't possible.
Because most of them can't be seen with the naked eye.
Because there was no funeral, Hannah. I press stop. Cassette 2, Side B. In honor of Hannah, I should order a hot chocolate. At Monet's, they serve them with tiny marshmallows floating on top. The only coffee shop I know of that does that. But when the girl asks, I say coffee, because I'm cheap. The hot chocolate costs a whole dollar more. She slides an empty mug across the counter and points to the pour-it-yourself bar. I pour in just enough half and half to coat the bottom of the mug. The rest I fill with Hairy Chest blend because it sounds highly caffeinated and maybe I can stay up late to finish the tapes. I think I need to finish them, and finish them tonight. But should I? In one night? Or should I find my story, listen to it, then just enough of the next tape to see who I'm supposed to pass them off to? What are you listening to? It's the girl from behind the counter. She's beside me now, tilting the stainless steel containers of half and half, low fat, and soy. She's checking to see if they're full. A couple of black lines, a tattoo, stretch up from her collar and disappear into her short, cropped hair. I glance down at the yellow headphones hanging around my neck. Just some tapes. Cassette tapes? She picks up the soy and holds it against her stomach. Interesting. Anyone I've heard of? I shake my head no and drop 3 cubes of sugar into my coffee. She cradles the soy with her other arm, then puts out her hand. We went to school together 2 years ago. You're Clay, right? I put down the mug, then slide my hand into hers. Her palm is warm and soft. We had one class together, she says, but we didn't talk much. She looks a little familiar. Maybe her hair's different. She says, I've changed a lot since high school. She rolls her heavily made-up eyes. Thank God. I place a wooden stirrer into my coffee and mix it. Which class did we have? Woodchop. I still don't remember her. The only thing I got out of that class were splinters, she says. Oh, and I made a piano bench. Still no piano, but at least I've got the bench. Do you remember what you made? I stir my coffee. Spice rack. The creamer mixes in and the coffee turns a light brown with some dark coffee grounds rising to the surface. I always thought you were the nicest guy, she says. In school, everyone thought so. Kind of quiet, but that's okay. Back then, people thought I talked too much. A customer clears his throat at the counter. We both glance at him, but he doesn't look away from the drink list. She turns back to me, and we shake hands again. Well, maybe I'll see you around when there's more time to talk. Then she walks back behind the counter. That's me. Nice guy, Clay. Would she still say that if she heard these tapes? I head to the back of Monet's toward the closed door that leads to the patio. Along the way, tables full of people stretch their legs or tilt back their chairs to form an obstacle course that begs me to spill my drink. A drop of warm coffee spills onto my finger. I watch it slide across my knuckles and drip to the floor. I rub the toe of my shoe over the spot till it disappears. And I recall, earlier today, watching a slip of paper fall outside the shoe store. After Hannah's suicide, but before the shoebox of tapes arrived, I found myself walking by Hannah's mom and dad's shoe store many times. It was that store that brought her to town in the first place. After 30 years in business, the owner of the store was looking to sell and retire, and Hannah's parents were looking to move. I'm not sure why I walked by there so many times. Maybe I was searching for a connection to her, some connection outside of school, and it's the only one I could think of. Looking for answers to questions I didn't know how to ask. About her life. About everything. I had no idea the tapes were on their way to explain it all. The day after her suicide was the first time I found myself at their store, standing outside the front door. The lights were out. A single sheet of paper taped to the front window said, "Well, be open soon," in thick black marker. It was written in a hurry, I figured. They just forgot the apostrophe. On the glass door, a delivery person had left a self-adhesive note. Among a list of other options, "We'll try again tomorrow" was checked. A few days later, I went back. Even more notes were stuck to the glass. On my way home from school earlier today, I went by the store one more time. As I read the dates and notes on each piece of paper, the oldest note became unstuck and fluttered to the ground, resting beside my shoe. I picked it up and searched the door for the most recent note. Then I lifted a corner of that note and stuck the older one beneath it. They'll be back soon, I thought. They must have taken her home for the burial, back to her old town. Unlike old age or cancer, no one anticipates a suicide. They simply left without a chance to get things in order. I opened the patio door at Monet's, careful not to spill any more of my coffee. Around the garden, to keep the atmosphere relaxed, the lights are kept low. Every table, including Hannah's in the far back corner, is occupied. Three guys in baseball caps sit there, hunched over textbooks and notebooks, none of them talking. I go back inside and sit at a small table near a window. It overlooks the garden, but Hannah's table is hidden by a brick column choked with ivy. I take a deep breath. As the stories go by one, I find myself relieved when my name isn't mentioned, followed by a fear of what she hasn't said yet, of what she's going to say, when my turn comes. Because my turn is coming, I know that, and I want it to be over with. What did I do to you, Hannah? I press play. While I wait for the first words, I stare out the window. It's darker outside than in here. When I pull my gaze back and focus my eyes, I can see my own reflection in the glass. And I look away. I glance down at the Walkman on the table. There's still no sound, but the play button is pressed. Maybe the tape didn't lock in place. So I hit stop. Then play again. Nothing. I roll my thumb over the volume dial. The static in the headphones gets louder, so I turn it back down. And I wait.
Shh. If you're talking in the library...
Her voice. It's a whisper.
Shh. In a movie theater or church.
I listen closer.
Sometimes there's no one around to tell you to be quiet. To be very, very quiet. Sometimes you need to be quiet when you're all alone. Like me, right now. Shh.
At the crowded tables that fill the rest of the room, people talk. But the only words I understand are Hannah's. The other words become a muffled background noise, occasionally tipped by a sharp laugh.
For example, you'd better be quiet, extremely quiet, if you're going to be a peeping Tom. Because what if they heard?
I let out a breath of air. It's not me. Still not me.
What if I found out? Guess what, Tyler Down? I found out.
I lean back in my chair and close my eyes.
I feel sorry for you, Tyler. I do. Everyone else on these tapes so far must feel a little relieved. They came off as liars or jerks or insecure people lashing out at others. But your story, Tyler, it's kind of creepy.
I take my first sip of coffee. A peeping Tom? Tyler? I never knew.
And I feel a little creepy telling it, too. Why? Because I'm trying to get closer to you, Tyler. I'm trying to understand the excitement of staring through someone's bedroom window, watching someone who doesn't know they're being watched, trying to catch them in the act of... What were you trying to catch me in the act of, Tyler? And were you disappointed or pleasantly surprised? Okay, a show of hands, please. Who knows where I am?
I set down my coffee, lean forward, and try to imagine her recording this. Where is she?
Who knows where I'm standing right now?
Then I get it and shake my head, feeling so embarrassed for him.
If you said outside Tyler's window, you're right. And that's A4 on your maps. Tyler's not home right now, but his parents are. And I really hope they don't come outside. Fortunately, there's a tall, thick bush just below his window, similar to my own window, so I'm feeling pretty safe. How are you feeling, Tyler?
I can't imagine what it was like for him to mail out these tapes, to know he was sending his secret into the world.
There's a meeting of the yearbook staff tonight, which I know involves a lot of pizza and gossip, so I know you won't be home until after it gets all nice and dark. Which, as an amateur peeping Tom, I appreciate very much. So thank you, Tyler. Thanks for making this so easy.
When Tyler heard this, Was he sitting here at Monet's, trying to look calm while sweating up a storm? Or was he lying in bed, staring bug-eyed out his window?
Let's take a peek inside before you get home, shall we? The hallway light's on so I can see in pretty well. And yes, I see exactly what I expected. There's a bunch of camera equipment lying around. You've got quite a collection here, Tyler. A lens for every occasion.
Including night vision. Tyler won a statewide contest with that lens. First place in the humor category. An old man walking his dog at night. The dog stopped to pee on a tree and Tyler snapped the picture. Night vision made it look like a green laser beam blasting out of the dog's crotch.
I know, I can hear you now. Those are for the yearbook, Hannah. I'm the student life photographer. And I'm sure that's why your parents were fine spending that kind of cash. But is that the only way you use this stuff? Candid shots of the student body? Yes. Candid shots of the student body. Before coming out here, I took the initiative to look up candid in the dictionary. It's one of those words with many definitions, but there's one that's most appropriate. And here it is. Memorized for your pleasure. Relating to photography of subjects acting naturally or spontaneously without being posed. So tell me, Tyler, those nights you stood outside my window, was I spontaneous enough for you? Did you catch me in all my natural unposed? Wait, did you hear that?
I sit up and lean my elbows on the table.
A car coming up the road.
I cup my hands over both ears.
Is it you, Tyler? It sure is getting close, and there are the headlights.
I can hear it, just under Hannah's voice. The engine.
My heart definitely thinks it's you. My God, it's pounding. The car's turning up the driveway.
Behind her voice, tires roll across pavement. The engine idles.
It's you, Tyler. It's you. You haven't stopped the engine, so I'm going to keep talking. And yes, this is exciting. I can definitely see the thrill.
It must have been terrifying for him to hear this. And it must be hell knowing he's not the only one.
Okay, listeners. Ready? Car door. And... shh.
A long pause. Her breathing is soft. Controlled. A door slams. Keys. Footsteps. Another door unlocks.
Okay, Tyler. Here's the play-by-play. You're inside the house with the door shut. You're either checking in with Mom and Dad, saying everything went great and this is going to be the best yearbook ever, or they didn't buy enough pizza and you're heading straight for the kitchen. As we wait, I'm going to go back and tell everyone how this all began. And if I'm wrong with the timeline, Tyler, find the other people on these tapes and let them know that you started peeping way before I caught you. You'll do that, right? All of you? You'll fill in the gaps? Because every story I'm telling leaves so many unanswered questions.
Unanswered? I would have answered any question, Hannah, but you never asked.
For example, how long were you stalking me, Tyler? How did you know my parents were out of town that week?
Instead of asking questions that night at the party, you started yelling at me.
Okay, confession time. The rule around my house when the parents are away is that I'm not allowed to date. Their feeling, though they won't bring themselves to say it, is that I might enjoy the date too much and ask the boy to come inside. In previous stories, I told you that the rumors you've all heard about me weren't true. And they're not. But I never claimed to be a goody-two-shoes. I did go out when my parents weren't home, but only because I could stay out as long as I wanted. And as you know, Tyler, on the night this all began, the boy I went out with walked me all the way to my front door. He stood there while I pulled out my keys to unlock the door. Then he left.